Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
LAIS Studios.
From LAIS Studios, this is How to LA, the show that connects you to all things Los Angeles. I'm Brian De Los Santos. LA is known for a lot of things. Our food, our entertainment scene, our beautiful hikes and access to nature. But one thing we're not really known for, especially compared to other big cities, is historical architecture. And before you come at me with your favorite example to prove me wrong, yes, we have the Victorians in Queen Anne's in Angelina Heights, a few beautiful examples of Art Deco downtown. But let's be real and acknowledge a hard truth. Our old buildings are few and far between. LA has built over a lot of its architectural history, mostly in the name of, quote, progress. Just look up Victorian downtown Los Angeles to see what developers leveled to build our freeways or the downtown LA Civic Center. But there is one thing that's stuck around, something we've got more historical designs of than any other U.S. city. Our street lamps.
When you're standing here and you're looking at an old streetlight from the 1920s, there's a really good chance that it's the oldest thing in your field of view. Older than the road, older than the buildings or the signs or anything like that. They really do connect us to the past.
Today, we're going to help you connect with an older version of LA, a footprint from our past that still guides our path today.
It's urban archaeology at its finest.
And we're doing it with author India Mandelkern. Her new book is called Electric Moons, A Social History of Street Lighting in Los Angeles.
What's really fun about going on a streetlight safari is that you get to be a detective and figure out things that haven't been written down in history books.
On our streetlight safari, India's taking us to MacArthur Park and Silver Lake, some areas that show off LA's high density of streetlight diversity.
LA doesn't have the most streetlights of any city, but it does have the most diversity of designs. And I think that that's really important because it shows not only what our tastes look like, but also what people cared about. There are over 400 different designs standing in the city alone, and that doesn't even include all the other cities that are part of LA County, like Beverly Hills or Pasadena or Santa Monica.
Let's get to the sidewalk.
Okay, we're here at the intersection of Wilshire and Parkview in MacArthur Park, right at the edge of it. And India, you brought us here because there are streetlights of all sorts of kinds. I see one, like, light bulb with, like, a little aura of on top of it. I'm bad at describing things sometimes, y'all. But it has a little hook, and then it's outside of the pole. It's really cute. I actually like that one. Then we have these, like, ugly, newer solar light, whatever else light that's attached to the stoplights. Not very aesthetic. Maybe, like, mid-mod era. And then we have this really elegant, very majestic. It's tall. It has four sides. On top of it, you see figures, like an emperor, empress sort of thing. And then it has a little, like, knot at the top. India, I want to turn it to you. We need the professional version of all the descriptions that I tried to give the audience. Can you just pinpoint me, like, actually, Brian, this is from this or from that? Give us a rundown.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you can see right here, we are seeing so many different streetlights from different eras of our history. So these light boxes that you described, this is one of the most iconic lamps in Los Angeles history. We called them the Wilshire Lanterns. The first batch of them were installed in 1928. all the way from Fairfax to MacArthur Park. They were part of this huge project to improve Wilshire, to make it more similar to a Fifth Avenue or a Champs-Élysées. In order to make that believable, we needed to have really awesome streetlights too. This street lamp, there's so much going on. The base, you see there's these weird kind of like Celtic inspired motifs. You got this Egyptian revival, papyrus thing going on. And then those figures that you pointed out, they're these topless women. We have no idea whether they're supposed to be classical Greek figures or flapper dancers. They have these short kind of flapper haircuts. Maybe they're up so high so they don't distract the drivers. But yeah, they really made Wilshire a very recognizable street.
If these descriptions aren't totally doing it for you, we've got plenty of photos on our link in the show notes. But I know a lot of y'all listen on the go, so maybe just look out the window from your car or the bus.
Unfortunately, most of them were taken down as roads got busier, more people owned cars, traffic violence became an ever-pressing problem. In 1957, the city decided to replace a lot of these lanterns with that lamp that you saw right across the street. A much higher pole, and instead of this light box, which didn't really give a lot of light, the lamps are illuminated with mercury vapor, which is 3 times brighter than the lamps that originally stood there, and they cast this kind of bluish tint over the road. I think what's most striking about these lamps is they kind of show us not only our tastes, but our priorities in terms of how we cared about moving around. You can see that those two luminaires are pointing right over the road, and the sidewalk is kind of an afterthought.
We're gonna step away from the street because it's so noisy. I do wanna ask you questions generally about streetlights. I think people who walk around the city may pay attention, but maybe they don't know so much about them. And reading your book, Electric Moons, it made me think about the city differently. So just a few facts, you know, there are over 220,000 streetlights in LA. How does that compare to other major cities and what do they tell us about the city?
That's a great question. Well, LA doesn't have the most streetlights of any city, but it does have the most diversity of different designs. And I think that that's really important because it shows us not only what our tastes look like, but also what people cared about. I think that LA was very much considered a place where people came to reinvent themselves or try some different styles on and create this new Mediterranean on the West Coast. So you'll see a lot of lamps around here are these weird pastiche of different styles. There's really this freewheeling spirit, especially during the 20s and 30s, in the design of different posts that you don't see anywhere else. And many of the manufacturers were actually homegrown LA manufacturers. They kind of remind us that LA had this really big manufacturing past that doesn't come top of mind today when we think about the history of Los Angeles. These poles, many of them were exported to different parts of the country. There's this whole diaspora of LA street lamps throughout the country that we don't really think about. I called the book Electric Moons because back in the day in the late 19th century when electric light was a very, very new thing, people would often refer to these lamps as electric moons or artificial suns or urban stars and things like that. When you think about them, there is something that's almost a little bit sacred about an old streetlight. They're these modern totems that represented the collective aspirations of our communities. Our first electric lights hit Los Angeles in 1882. Before then, we relied on gas lighting. Gas was unreliable. You know, if there was a big gust of wind, they could go out, they flickered and they sputtered, and you had to have a person go out and light them. The idea that you could light a street light and it would stay on all night, it wouldn't go off, it wouldn't flicker, was a really huge deal and was really important in making LA a quintessentially modern and progressive city.
You know, one of the things that I learned was there could have been a street light on a street where there were no buildings around and maybe not really a road. And so they were kind of like the significant emblem of civilization in LA. Can you just talk about like how streetlights began to shape the city?
Well, I think that they reflect, but they're also reflective of the way that our city expanded. We have so many different designs because real estate developers would want to install a fancy streetlight as an advertisement to tell future buyers that this was going to be a classy neighborhood. And if you look at these early advertisements for various subdivisions around LA, they'll often call out the fact that they have streetlights in addition to maybe proximity to a streetcar line or concrete paved roads or building restrictions on the lots. So streetlights were very much part of the advertisement as a modern residential neighborhood. I think one of the most fascinating yet ambiguous aspects of street lighting is that it's never quite clear whether they're meant to keep people safe or whether they're tools of surveillance. There's been a lot of controversy around that recently with the idea of putting cameras on lights. But after the Watts uprising, there was a streetlight building frenzy throughout Los Angeles, not because people necessarily thought that streetlights were guaranteed to make communities safe, but I think that installing them was a sort of symbolic gesture that officials were taking action to fix conditions in different communities.
LA's early street lamps were often evidence of the haves and the have-nots, spotlighting class divisions through the city from the very beginning. More on that after the break. Stay with us.
Support for LAist comes from Latino Theater Company at the Los Angeles Theater Center, presenting the world premiere of Mix Mix, the Filipino Adventures of a German Jewish Boy by Boney B. Alvarez. Inspired by true events from the life of Ralph Price, after escaping Nazi Germany, a newfound tropical refuge in the Philippines is upended when Japan invades the islands. On stage through June 16th. Tickets and information at latinotheaterco.org.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
And we're back. Continuing our streetlight safari with India Mandelkern on the corner of Edgemont and Franklin in Los Feliz. India, so what's next for us?
I want to show you some lampposts that are over 100 years old. The LA Times started writing about streetlights in early 1882. And what I like to always point out to people is that the LA Times only opened for business in late 1881. So it was one of the biggest news stories of the year over the course of 1882, petitioning, installing, and finally lighting the streetlight. A lot of vintage streetlights are cast iron. Here's the logo of the manufacturer, and you can see it was made in Los Angeles. Yeah. So Keystone Iron and Steel was a big manufacturer that made a lot of oil well equipment, but they also made fire hydrants and street lamps and things like that. And this is called the Keystone 8. It's very playful. It almost looks like it comes from the circus with these colorful buttons and these little scrolls around its neck. It's a model that used to be a lot more prevalent. You used to find them all the way down in Koreatown. Now they're only left in this one little stretch of Edgemont in Los Feliz. A lot of these street lamps disappeared because it was thought that they weren't bright enough for automobile safety. So you can tell that this one is really short. It's probably one of the shortest ones we've seen, and it was installed in 1921 when far fewer people had cars, and cars weren't nearly as fast. As cars got faster, more people owned them, and it changed the way that we got around. Streetlights had to get taller and brighter to ostensibly make roads safer, but it's still not completely clear whether having tons of street lighting actually makes it's safer for driving. Some people say that it actually incites people to drive faster.
It's interesting that we're in this area of Los Feliz and there's a Rolls Royce, an Audi, Mercedes parked out here. Do you think, was this also another rich area back in the day, back when these were being installed?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that streetlights tell us a lot about class divisions. Most of the streetlights that survive are often tend to be in whiter, wealthier neighborhoods where there are more people who actually own homes instead of rent, because paying for streetlights is the decision of the homeowner rather than the renter. So they have to decide whether they want to be assessed in their property taxes to pay for these streetlights. A lot of these street lamps were advertisements for really nice neighborhoods. So when homeowners were shopping around, having illuminated streets was often a selling point. That isn't completely true across the board. I think more and more today, people are very concerned about light pollution. And so there are a lot of neighborhoods that decided, hey, you know, we don't want these extra lights. Maybe it will encourage more people to drive faster. We don't want that. They do often fall along class divisions. That's why there's many streetlights that don't exist in South LA anymore. They got ripped up for taller, more functional, and brighter poles. And oftentimes, if you see historic streetlights in some areas of South LA, they are relics to when those neighborhoods were exclusively white neighborhoods. There's actually a really cool lamp I want to show you guys just one block away.
Let's go.
Okay, so I'm going to show you now a concrete light. We just saw cast iron. Now we're going to see a light from a manufacturer called Marbolite, which was also an LA-based company. And they dealt exclusively in concrete streetlights.
Oh, I love this. I feel like this is more common. Like, I feel like I would see these at Hancock Park or some of those neighborhoods.
Yeah, so these were cheaper to install. So they tend to be in more residential neighborhoods and they tend to be a little shorter, so they work better for residences than big boulevards where there's lots of traffic, there's lots of cars, there's lots of people crossing the street. But this model we're looking at now, this is called the Marbolite 2000, and there are still a lot of them left throughout LA. Distinguishable because they have this really strange base in the bottom. I don't even know how to describe it. It almost looks like a big claw foot. And then they have this really pretty urn at the top that is shaped as these acanthus leaves. I mean, they really look like old relics because sometimes there's all this grass growing around them. Sometimes they seem like they're growing out of people's properties because not all sidewalks had parkways to put the streetlights in. And sometimes I'll see homes where there are streetlight pieces and they use them to decorate their gates. I call that streetlight spolia. I used to live really close to here, and I'd always wonder, why do the streetlights stop at one block and then pick up on another? It shows you just how small these lighting districts were oftentimes. They would only be big enough for one group of homes. It tells you, you know, who wanted to be seen and who wanted illumination and who either couldn't afford it or wanted to be left in the dark. Street lamps for us today are very ubiquitous and we pass them by and don't really notice. But 100 years ago, when a street light was turned on, they would be accompanied by these huge celebrations, and sometimes the mayor would be there, celebrities would be there, and they really did represent the collective aspirations of entire communities.
Anita, thank you so much for hanging out with me today and going on this adventure.
Thank you for joining me on this streetlight safari, which I think is one of the most underappreciated yet rewarding ways to explore Los Angeles on foot.
India's book is called Electric Moons, A Social History of Street Lighting in Los Angeles.
If you want to buy the book, check out Hatton Beard's website and support independent publishing.
You can also find her in her nerdy street lamp glory on Instagram.
I actually have a street lamp Instagram called Street Lamp Illuminati, and I welcome guest posts, so please send them in.
My pitch for you now is next time you're walking around town, just take a look at what the street lamp looks like. These are all part of LA history. And it's something that you won't find as much in any other American city. That is it for us today. Thanks for joining me on another episode of How to LA. Stay connected with us by subscribing and or send us an email at howtola@scpr.org. This episode was produced by Evan Jacoby. Our other producers are Megan Botel, Monica Bushman, and Victoria Alejandro. Support for this podcast is made possible by Gordon and Donna Crawford, who believe that quality journalism makes Los Angeles a better place to live.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.